Grab a seat, folks. How many of you have heard or have heard of Phil Calloway? Yeah. Phil's voice can be heard on over 600 radio stations. You've heard of spiritual gifts. Every Christian has a spiritual gift. Phil's gift is the gift of making people laugh. It's Ephesians 4, verse 26. Phil has written 25 books. He's been used by God all over the world to bring the joy of the Lord into people's lives. But though Phil is a person who is gifted with humor, he is a deep person, as is his wife. They've been through a lot together, a lot of joys and a lot of sorrows. They're family people. They actually live in the town that my wife was born in, Three Hills, Alberta. And as we found out, we know a lot of the same people, and though Phil is not blessed with a Mennonite heritage, he almost is because of all the Mennonite people that he knows. But we are very happy to have you guys here with us. Welcome. They have been invited by the Gideons to be here in Vancouver for this weekend. There was a wonderful event here last night. You will hear a little bit about the Gideons. We are a supporting church of the Gideons Canada, who is doing, they are doing such wonderful things in the world, putting Bibles in the hands of people and helping the church to evangelize. So today is a special day because Phil and Ramon are here, and open your heart and your mind to them. Let's welcome Phil as he comes and preaches this morning.
Thank you so much, Brian. I'm really an honorary Mennonite. I always wanted to be one because most of my friends are, and we love you guys, and wow, to meet Brian and his wife Myrna and the staff, the team here has been a great honor, and thank you for having me. Most of you had nothing to do with it, I understand that, but I am here because I love Jesus, and to hear from you grads, let me tell you, that just, if that doesn't light your fire, your wood's wet, just the potential, and you need to know that there's an enemy, and the verse was so appropriate, that wants your soul and your heart and your mind, and he's going to use sometimes people that you have come to trust a little bit, professors, whatever, to speak lies into your life. So make sure you're in the Word and staying in touch with people here at this church who love you very much. Thank you for being here this morning. It is a great privilege to be in this place where God is honored, where his truth is taught, where he is loved, where you reach out to others. A great honor also to speak on behalf of the Gideons. I have been representing them for some time. Love what they're about. A little more about that later. I have with me about a 5-pound Bible. This is a beautiful New Living Translation Illustrative Study Bible. I want to tell you how you can take one of those home with you in a few minutes. But this morning, I want to talk a little bit about some of the struggles of life. I don't know about any of you. Have you ever experienced some of them? Perhaps not. Maybe you're like I was as a kid. I was a crazy little kid. I thought my name was Smartin' Up. That's all grown-ups called me. And I love to see what children have said about what they're learning in Sunday school. Have you heard any of these things? Maybe you've been to Sunday school. Kids come home and they say, you know, the first commandment was when Eve told Adam to eat the apple. It's the first commandment. Noah's wife was called Joan of Arc, a little guy said. Solomon had 200 wives and 700 porcupines. A man should have only one wife, a little guy said. This is called monotony. We know it's not, don't we? Little guy said the greatest miracle in the Bible was when Joshua commanded his son to stand still and he obeyed him. Yeah. My favorite from a little kid about Sunday school, Lot's wife was a pillar of salt by day, but a ball of fire by night. That's what he said. You never know what kids are learning. in Sunday school. When our kids were small, we have three children. We had them fast. The anesthetic from the first birth was still working for the third. We had three children in 3 years. Has anyone done that or done better? A few of you? Yeah. Someone said, what's it like to have three kids in 3 years? I said, we are far more satisfied than the guy who has $3 million. How so? Well, the guy with $3 million wants more. It's you're pretty bright. They didn't get that in Abbotsford. Oh, that's good. But kids, we love these kids so very much. But we sent them off to school. Do you remember doing this? I mean, suddenly they're seniors in high school, but we sent them off to school, and they sent them back because they were only three, and we had to wait a little longer, and finally they accepted our children. And we asked them when they came home, do you remember? What did you learn today? Have you done that? What do they say? Nothing. And then they bring home their report cards, and we find out they are not lying. It's amazing. They're not always learning things in school. One guy was asked, a high schooler, what is a nitrate? He wrote down, much cheaper than a day rate. Name six animals found in the Arctic, four polar bears, two seals. That's what he was learning. Yeah. Where was the Declaration of Independence signed? At the bottom. Pretty good. Makes sense to me. Well, it's good to laugh, but let's face it, sometimes the joy is gone. I want us to read together from the wonderful book of James. I trust that you're learning this. I tell you, seniors in high school, would you do this? You're in the prime years of being able to retain this stuff. So let's do this together, okay? Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And then on to verse 12. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. We quickly find three things there and much more, but we will have trials. We will. We're promised that. Isn't that a bummer? Some of us think, whoa. Especially when we're younger, we think, come on, not me. The text does not say, if you are one of the unfortunate ones, you will have trials, perhaps. No, it doesn't. We will have trials. We're promised that. And we're promised that we are being tested in the midst of those. And we can come forth as gold coming through the fire. And thirdly, we are going to be rewarded in the end. How good to know that there is purpose in our pain. Many of you are there. I've talked to a few already this morning who are struggling, and that is the way it is. In the midst of this, where do we find the joy? I know it's good to laugh. I love to laugh. I've spent the last 25 years writing books and traveling the world, helping people laugh, and we need to. I had a phone call from a guy who said, Callaway, I don't much like your sense of humor. He said, what does laughing have to do with being a Christian? We're in the last days. This is hardly a time for laughter. What would you say? I said, is that you, Dad? I didn't know what else to say. I found out where he lived and went and put a potato in his exhaust pipe. No, I didn't. But I got thinking that we as believers in Jesus Christ have every reason to rejoice. Amen. How many have been forgiven? Have you? Eternity is waiting for the likes of us. These songs we've been singing this morning remind us of that. Three of my favorite songs. Thank you, team, for leading us in those. But how can I laugh? This book tells me. It is filled with joy. Joy is one of the great notes all through the Bible. And the ending, God gets his kids back. Do you get excited about what is ahead? I sure do. Psalm 126, 2, I love this verse. It tells what happened when God freed the captives. It says, our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to be said about Pacific Community Church? The Lord has done great things. Look at them in the midst of trials and struggles. Look at the joy. You know, they tell us that children laugh 200 times a day. And I think it's true. Children just find things funny. I mean, you hit your head on a car door, ha! But by the time we are the average adult, we are down to 4 laughs a day. Where did we lose our sense of humor? Where did we lose 196 laughs? Perhaps you know, I began to lose my sense of humor back in fifth grade when our teacher, Miss Ida Weissmuller, came from Germany to conduct experiments in our classroom. Here she is. She had, sort of. This is my recollection of her. She had a bun in her hair pulled too tight to allow her any smiling. And she was sick of me by September the 4th. She had had enough. She looked out, I remember distinctly, she said, "Philip, you will stand to tell us what is so funny." And I thought, I can't repeat the joke I just told Bobby Spaulding. Ernie, you would remember the Spaulding family. I can't repeat this. I will be shot. So she said, "Come forward. You will stand right there, and you will face the class for 1 hour. That is your punishment." Well, I got looking out on the boys and girls that day, and I thought, for some people, this would be punishment. For me, this is a knock-knock of opportunity. And so I did various things, you know, for the boys and girls, and they enjoyed it very much. And in my closing act, I did something terrible. I took a comb from my pocket. I don't carry one now. Why would I? You know, my hair has gone underground and is coming out my ears. But I had hair then. I pulled out this comb and I put it above my lip and I just went like that. "I'm sorry, I was a little kid." I don't know if any of you have been hit by flying chalk. Have some of you? It tends to take the laughter out of your body, does it not? And maybe you feel a little like Miss Weissmuller did that day. That same year, I was 10 years of age, I found a way of getting a skunk into my neighbor's trunk. My neighbor was a good man. He did not deserve this. His hair was just right, and his wife's hair was permed. Her lips were pursed and ready for him when he got home. It was a beautiful situation. They had two children, one of each, and what a glorious family they were. Their lives were going well until my friend and I found a skunk in the middle of the street. It was just lying there. It was deceased, and we found a way of getting this thing. We thought, certainly it still serves some purpose, you know. And we got it into a bag and into this man's trunk. We didn't have television in those days. We had to do stuff. And so we did that, and we got it into this man's trunk. Did I mention that he was my Sunday school teacher? I don't think I did. And he carried the accordion, or played the accordion, and also carried a beeper, which I thought was optimistic for an accordion player, but he did. And his life was going well until his wife and him and the two kids came out of their house. My friend and I were watching behind some shrubs, and he came out and got into his car and he took off. They didn't get far before they stopped. And there was conversation in the car. I don't know what was going on. I think she was blaming him for the smell. I don't know what was happening back there. He got out, he opened that trunk, and his suspicions were confirmed. We watched our Sunday school teacher completely lose it. This man slammed the lid. He kicked that bumper. He began using words he had not taught us in Sunday school. And it's taken me a while to have perspective on this, but I've started to realize that for every single one of us in this room, there comes a time when a skunk gets into our trunk. Am I right? A time when something comes along that we definitely would not have chosen. But what is it that separates those who resign from those who rejoice? What is it? I hope you want to know this morning, because I want to give you four secrets of a skunk buster. Four biblical secrets that are absolutely essential to living life with joy right now, today, whatever it is you're going through. So let's do that and talk about bringing joy to life. I want to mention the Gideons. We've got the study Bibles, of course. Ramona and I brought some books that I have written, some DVDs and CDs. Those are available at the back, and all the proceeds from that go to the Gideons. So if you don't mind, I'll just show you very, very briefly. I'll do the 8-second routine of what some of them are. Making Life Rich Without Any Money is back there. CDs for kids and grandkids, DVDs, a little golf book that I've written, believe it or not. If you yell 9 or 4 after shooting 9 and write down 3, that may be for you. To be perfectly honest on trying to live without a lie for a year, tricks my dog taught me about life, love, and God. I used to have answers, now I have kids. Family squeezes on dealing with my parents and Alzheimer's and dementia. They lived with us 5 years while that was going on. Laughing Matters on learning to laugh when life stinks is the one I want to talk to you about this morning. Little book for kids back there and grandkids. Be kind, be friendly, be thankful. The U.S. Army ordered 50,000 copies of those to give to military kids, so it's been a lot of fun. A little kind of bathroom reading book on when you need a good laugh. There's joy and there's truth in each one of those. So here we go. Are you taking notes? Point number one, I want you to say it with me. Here we go. You're better to live rich All right, I think you know what I mean when I say that. I mentioned the book Making Life Rich Without Any Money, and I began to ask people when I was writing this, what has made your life rich? What would you say this morning? Over and over, people told me relationships make me rich, a relationship with a spouse, with God, a relationship with a grandchild, whatever it was. 93% of the respondents to a survey that I did listed relationships in some way as number one. But one guy, I remember, got talking to me, and he said, you know what, I know what makes me rich, but it's making me poor. Relationships are falling apart. The joy is gone. Write about that. Well, I'm an expert in this area because I have watched some relationships sour. I remember when a guy by the name of Vance moved in from British Columbia, next door to me. He became my neighbor. His last name is Newdorf. He's a great Mennonite guy, and I loved this guy from the start. He came over, and he told me Mennonite jokes until I was physically sick, Brian. He would launch off into this thing. He said, did you know there's conclusive proof that Adam was a Mennonite? I said, the first man was a Mennonite? He said, yes. Who else would stand beside a woman who was dressed like that and be tempted by an apple? That's what he said to me. And I loved this guy, of course, until the day he came over and insulted my lawnmower. I had a perfectly good electric lawnmower. He said, those are for wimps. You should have a gas-powered lawnmower like mine, a real man's lawnmower. Oh, I didn't like this at all. And I especially didn't like it when my lawnmower quit so loud you could hear it quit in Surrey, British Columbia. And I had to humble myself, go over and ask to borrow my neighbor's lawnmower. He was only too quick to lend it to me. I took it home. I cut our grass in big, wide, manly swaths all the way to the back. And I returned the lawnmower. 1 week later, had to borrow it again. Knocked on Vance's door. He was not home. I thought, we are such good friends now, I will just borrow it. And so I did. It was going great until I got to the very back of the backyard, to the stump, about this big around, 2 inches in the air. I thought, last week I went over this, or I went around it, this time I'll go over it. Needs trimmed anyway. It's a man's lawnmower. Bang! It stopped dead, never to start again. What would you do? I am not a mechanically minded person like many of you, but I like looking at things that are broken, and so I turned it over. Oil was dripping out of it. The crankshaft was bent. The pull start thing wouldn't pull. What would you do? I knew what to do. When I was a little boy, my father told me, he said, if ever you borrow something, return it. And so I did, and I put it in that little slot beside the shed. I left on a 5-day business trip to Washington, D.C. Got home from this trip, Vance was waiting for me. He said, do you have a flashlight? I said, I do. Went into the house, got a flashlight. I thought, he is going to club me to death with a flashlight for what I've done. I don't want to die this way. I handed it to him, and he motioned me over to the stump. It was growing dark, so he turned the flashlight on the stump. He had poured an entire bottle of ketchup, red like blood, all over the stump. There was a white spray-painted outline of a lawnmower in the grass beside it, and a yellow ribbon police line, do not cross, around the trees. He said, we have a suspect. Oh, Mennonites, they're the best. Took me over to our garden. We took a picture of it so I could prove to you what it looked like. Here it is. Here he had buried the lawnmower. And he made up his own little tombstone, a life so quickly taken by a hand so quick to take. He will never mow what life had in the grass ahead of him. Well, it's not hard to understand why Vance is one of my very best friends today. You see, if I need to talk to someone who knows how to practice the fine art of forgiveness, I talk to Vance. Vance knows what every one of us who has good friendships knows. If you expect perfection from other Christians, your entire life will be a series of disappointments and grumblings and complaints. But if you accept others as the imperfect creatures all of us are, you just may find yourself a lifelong friend. My story doesn't end there. Vance's wife went down to a little hardware store in our town, entered to win a beautiful red self-propelled lawnmower. Guess what happened? They won. And today, all because of me. Right? They have a beautiful lawnmower in their backyard. I haven't tried borrowing it yet, but I do keep reminding them just how very blessed they are to have me for a friend. How are you doing in the area of relationships? Let's read these words from God's Word. Proverbs 17:9, disregarding another person's faults preserves love. Telling about them separates close friends. And this from Ephesians 4, be humble and gentle. be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. And Colossians 3, Brian has been preaching through, forgive the person who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. How are you doing? You're better to live rich than to die rich. Second point is this. Don't jump from the train when you're in a tunnel. Some of you are experiencing struggles in your life and you want to run. Sometimes we have to stay, don't we? And sometimes the joy doesn't come for years and years and years. But we do the right thing, and when we've done the wrong thing, we make it right. And God will use us by His grace. All of us are sinful, fallen people. But God will use us as we make things right. Ramona is with me. We have been celebrating 35 years of marriage. It's a miracle marriage. It really is. You know, she says, you want breakfast in bed, sleep in the kitchen. And we laugh. Laughter has been a wonderful thing. 35 years, I have been such a blessing to my wife, I tell you. 35 of the best years of her life. I was writing an article on marriage. I had just written out the line, my Visa card is missing, but the thief is spending less than my wife, so we haven't reported it yet. And thought that was funny, but the phone rang. It was not funny at all. It was my wife on the line. She said, honey, help me. I don't know what day it is. I don't know where I am. And I took off running for our house. I came in the door. Our kids were smaller at the time. Our eldest son, he looked up at me. He said, Daddy, is Mama going to die? And I didn't know what he meant. I knew all about Ramona. She moved in next door to me in 10th grade. I made it my life Bible verse to love my neighbor as myself. And she's the second best thing that's ever happened to me outside of my relationship with Jesus. But I came into the living room that day. She was lying on the floor unconscious, lying in a pool of blood, a large gash in her leg. She had just had the first seizure of her life and the first of many, many hundreds to come. So how can I stand before you and say, oh, we just laugh all the time? No, we don't. You know that. The tears come. Where do you go in the midst of these struggles? I remember the Thanksgiving night. I was getting the kids ready for bed, and I was reading to them from a picture book, a Bible picture book, of the story of the Good Shepherd who loves us and cares for his sheep. Ramona came into the room and stretched out her hand to me and fell to the floor with another seizure. Daddy, is Mama going to die? I don't know. But I do know this, whatever happens, I'm going to be here. Whatever happens, God loves us. There's purpose in this. We're going to find it. And we're doing all we can to help Mama. We had been to 12 specialists by that time, and very frustrated and sometimes angry I was. And I remember getting the kids into bed and finally got everybody asleep, and I drifted off. And suddenly there was a little kid beside our bed. He tapped me on the shoulder, woke me up to inform me that he could not sleep. I had to be up in about 4 hours anyway. So I got up and I took him across the hall, tucked little Jeffrey into bed. I said, Jeff, I tell you what'll help you sleep. I want you to think of some things you're glad about, things you're thankful for. And this little kid looks up at me and says, Daddy, you start. Oh, I didn't want to start. I was worried about my wife, wondering if she would be alive when I got back across the hall, and a little concerned about my kids and worried about tomorrow. And I started to think of a Bible verse my mother had drummed into me when I was a little boy. We're going to read it together right now from 1 Thessalonians 5. Be joyful some of the time. What? What did you say? Always. Wow. Pray occasionally. No, pray continually. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. You know from listening to Brian that the one who wrote this did not have life easy, did he? Beaten, shipwrecked, left for dead, imprisoned, he wrote these words. And I thought to myself, if Paul can write those words, I can live them too. Can I not? So I began on my thankful list for Jeffrey. I'm thankful for it. Thanksgiving Day. I'm thankful we don't eat turkey every day of the year. We'd all look like the Goodyear blimp by Christmas, you know. I'm thankful for attention deficit disorder, which I personally developed back in second grade. It helps me write short stories, yeah. I'm thankful for the dark. It's the only time I can see the stars. And I'm thankful for three wonderful children who surround us with laughter and energy and mischief and love, and I'm glad all of them have finally gone to sleep. And now I think I will too. How about you? What are you thankful for this morning? Shout something out from over here. Come on. Your wife. Yeah. Kids. Sleep. A teenager saying sleep. Yes, you're in the prime sleeping years of your life, my friend. You just are. It's wonderful. Enjoy it. Our son came home from Bible camp one time. He slept a full 23 hours in a row, weary from memorizing Bible verses, I'm sure. Yeah. God bless you. Someone over here, what are you thankful for?
Salvation.
Oh, yeah. Does it get any better? Wow. Would you over lunch today talk about this? Talk about what you are grateful for. Joy grows best in the soil of thanksgiving. Third point this morning is this. Say it with me. Courage is fear that has said its prayers. I think you know what I mean, don't you? I don't know what scares you. I get scared of different things. I told last night on this stage how one of my greatest fears now is having a heart attack while playing the game charades. Don't think about that. Just don't even be thinking about that. You're clutching your chest and they're guessing, you know. Hope it never happens to you. You know, the number one fear out there above terrorism now is speaking in public. Did you know that? How many of you fear speaking in public? Many of you. Brian, see, that is so often great ministers of the gospel who struggle. I'll tell a little about my story. That was me, leading fear. Huge. I remember being in high school, and our teacher, Mr. Al Bienert, came up to me, one of the teachers, and I was having a drink between classes at the drinking fountain. He came over to me, tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "Callaway, come here." He said, "You're not doing well in school." Like I didn't know this. I was a horrible student. I loved making people laugh, but to actually sit still, it about killed me. My marks had been slipping since kindergarten. He said, your math marks aren't adding up, I think is what he said. Biology, physics, chemistry, science. He went on to list subjects I was flunking. And then he said, "But you have a gift in the area of communication. I want you to come into my communication arts class tomorrow morning. It's not too late in the semester to start." Wow, for the first time in my life, a teacher wanted me in his class. I was so excited. I remember the first assignment was to write out a little poem, and I discovered my love for writing. And handed in this poem, and it was a few weeks later, Mr. Al Bienert got me up in front of the class. He said, "Callaway, congratulations, first place in a poetry contest. I entered this thing." He said, "Here." He said, and he took $5 Canadian from his pocket. And he said, "Here, I didn't know you could be paid for this." Wow. He said, "I want you to read it in front of the class or in the whole school on Friday. 300 kids. I thought, no way. I will never do something like that. But I looked at those $5. I thought, I'll do anything for $5. I got up and I was shaking. I had my poem with me, and two former friends were sitting very close to the podium. They had put a white Timex alarm clock underneath the podium. It went off. They set it to go while I was up there already shaking. And I sat down, poem unfinished, knowing I will never speak in public again. Well, God apparently had other things in mind. I wrote my first book in 1993. It was called Honey, I Dunked the Kids, and it took off. They called me from the U.S. to tell me this is a hit. It's a bestseller. You better get ready to be on radio, TV. You better get ready to speak. And I said, no. I just remember saying that, no. There's no way I can do that. First radio station I was ever on, I did not sleep all night. I was so scared. I got onto 100 Huntley Street. They asked me, "Phil, what is the key to being a good dad?" I said, "It's like Martin Luther once said," and my mind went completely blank. It did. I can remember it now, no problem, but it went blank. I said, he said that we should never forget what he said, and I don't know what it was. And they laughed. Wow. People started to call me. The first lady that called me, not from the White House, but the first lady that called me to speak, she said, "Phil, would you speak to our high school graduating class?" And I said, "No." I said, "I can't." Three words, "No, I can't." And I believed that. I went home one night. Ramona was at the kitchen sink stabbing potatoes. I sneaked up behind her. Be careful if you ever do this. But there she was. And I said, "Honey, people are wanting me to speak. I don't know what to do." She said, "Do you remember in the Bible, God used Balaam's donkey to talk? You know, maybe he could use you." And I thought it was a compliment. So I went into my bed, actually to our bed, we share a bed, and I knelt down beside the bed, and I opened my hands to God. I said, God, whatever I have, it's yours. Whatever you want, I will do. If you can use a guy like me, that would be a miracle. 3 days later, a lady from Edmonton, Alberta said, Phil, on the phone said, Phil, would you come? We have a ladies group. We're reading your book. Would you come and make us laugh? And I said, I can do that. I can't speak, but I can make you laugh. Just, if you need a reference, call Miss Ida Weissmuller. You know, she's still alive. Got up in front of these ladies, and it was wonderful. One of them fell off a chair laughing. It was beautiful to see. But you know what? I was going home that night by myself in the car, talking out loud to God, thanking him for the joy of doing something that scared me to death. But when he is in it, get this, teenagers, everything changes. Everything. God continually uses the most underqualified people to do his work because we know we can't do it without him, right? And when we see good things happen, we know exactly who gets the credit. He does. I wrote down in my Bible, Moses stuttered, Sarah laughed, Jacob wrestled, Abraham lied, Rahab was a prostitute. David liked rooftops, you know. Jeremiah was depressed. Peter was afraid of death. Lazarus was dead. And I wrote, I guess you can use me too, God. And he does that. He's going to do that through you graduates. God bless you. Courage is fear that has said its prayers. What do you need to pray about? On an August night, my wife was down to 90 pounds. People in our little town didn't recognize her. She was having seizures every half an hour and unable to eat. I knew I was going to lose her. And that night, I was angry at God. I knelt by a camp chair in our backyard after everyone was asleep, and I pounded my fists in the grass, and I said, God, what do you want? And then I knew what I needed to do. I opened my hands again to God, and I said, God, whatever you want, I'm yours. Whatever you want, I'll do. God's never written any divine graffiti on the sky for me, and I would like that. But I had the distinct impression I needed to talk to a doctor I hadn't talked to before, and the next morning I got him on the phone. He prescribed a simple anti-seizure medication that changed our lives. Within 2 weeks, she was waking up beside the most thankful guy on earth. I'm thankful to tell you she's doing very well. But you know what? You have these beautiful mountains up out here, and nothing is growing at the top. It's down in the valley where the water is running and the grass is green, and so it is in life. We love those mountaintop experiences, but some of you are in the valley. Would you pray? Turn toward the one who loves you. Courage is fear that has said its prayers. Finally, remember this, that even ants have time to attend a picnic. Let's slow down a little bit. Let's remember that even if you win the rat race, you are still a rat. During those days, it was a little later, I was writing these books, and I had a call from a company in California saying, Callaway, we want you to come and work for us. We don't know what you make now, but we will triple it in American dollars. And I thought, I have never heard God's voice this clearly on the phone before. Wow. We got on a plane, we took off for California, sat around a large oak boardroom table. They peppered me with questions. I answered them correctly. They said, Phil, the job is yours. Ramona was sitting beside me, and I asked the president, I said, how much time will I be gone from home? And he said, you know what, you're going to be gone most of the time. Ramona is very gentle, but she was kind of kicking me under the table. And we got onto a plane. She took my hand. She said, honey, life is lived in chapters. Shouldn't this one include 3 children and a wife who loves you too? But I knew God's will for my wife. I wanted that job, the prestige, the success, the climbing of that ladder. We got into Seattle. We had a short layover there. I had to use the little boy's room. And when I did, I latched the stall door behind me and the place immediately began to shake. I don't know if any of you have been in an earthquake. This place went crazy. The place was shaking. I knew I was going to die. And the guy next to me said, did I do that? And I was speechless in Seattle. But there I was standing. Knowing I was going to die, I had images flash through my mind. None of them had anything to do with a big house, with a fancy car, a step up that ladder of success. They had to do with the people God had put into my life. I got out of there as fast as I could. I grabbed Ramona when I found her, and I thought, I'm going to hug her and give her, you know, a kiss and let her feel the earth move one more time. We got onto a plane, headed for home. I took out an airline napkin. I'd encourage you to do this today, to write down Your definition of success. This is what I wrote. I will consider myself a success when I'm walking close to Jesus every day. When I'm building a strong marriage, loving my kids, and performing meaningful work, I'll consider myself a success when I'm making others homesick for heaven. Is that you? You know, when we're walking close to Jesus, we're not looking at stuff. We're looking at the needs all around us. I had finished speaking somewhere here in Canada in a city about hope and about joy, and a young woman came up to me in denim and dressed nicely, and she lifted her sleeve up almost to her elbow. And it was covered in scars. And she said, "Phil, I want to thank you. I don't know where I would be without your message of joy on the radio. I was overwhelmed by this. But this is what I'm seeing as we travel. I tell you, hopelessness and despair among our youth is epidemic. A teenager left a suicide note for his parents. It said this: you gave me everything to live with and nothing to live for. You drive an hour north of my house in Three Hills, you're going to find a community that consists of four First Nations reserves. 3,000 students are in its schools, and suicide is haunting their hallways. It is epidemic. Emily Souce is a mama grieving the loss of her son. We'll show you a picture of Emily in a CBC News report about it. Her son took his own life. She says this: "I'm broken, hurt, lost. We are dying. There's a spirit here. At night, sometimes I can feel the heaviness creep over the land, the dark side running around, knocking on doors and windows, looking for its next victim." This is Emily. Mental health worker Rick Lightning works there, and he says this: "The only people doing well are the funeral homes making money off of us. Our children are crying for help." In January and February of 2018, one student took his or her life every 18 hours. They stopped counting after 150 each year, and it didn't take them long to get there this year. They are crying out for help. They are six times as likely to take their own lives as the rest of us. And the statistics are awful. And I don't know about you, but when I hear these things, I want to do something. I do. I'm a guy, I kind of like to fix things. What can I do? Pastor Muriel sits on the chief of council as head of education there. This is amazing. God has his people, you know. Mario says they've tried everything. They're so desperate, they are now considering offering each of the 3,000 students, guess what? A Bible. A Bible. And when? This September, when school enrollment is highest. But who can do this? Well, how about an organization that's been doing this for over 100 years, bringing the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to millions all over the world? You see, every day the Gideons receives urgent requests for Bibles from people looking for answers to life's biggest questions. And times change. I don't know how many of you got a Gideon Bible when you were in about 10 or so, I think it was, grade 5, yeah. So I got one as well. I'm one of those. And they're doing what they can. They've got some very innovative ways of getting, by the way, teenagers. If you look up the Gideon's website, you can get all you want, Bibles to give to your friends who ask for it. There's nothing anyone can do in our schools if one of your friends comes and asks you for a Bible. You can give it to them. So load up. Go ahead. Times change. This is not your grandparents' Gideon's, though those methods were fantastic for the time. The Gideons, Canada, has found these fresh and innovative ways to bring hope, and they're going into the deepest, darkest places in our country and in other countries. They are rescuing young women from sexual slavery. They're offering hope to those living in despair, and something remarkable is happening. I had a video, and it's not working, so we're not going to be able to show that. But Barry's story tells of him being 9 years of age, coming home, his mother isn't there, he's alone, goes downstairs, takes apart some computer cords, and you know what he does. He hooks it up to the ceiling and finds a way to hang himself. 9 years of age in absolute despair. And somehow, the cord broke. And he ended up living. And today, Barry is working with the Gideons, and he is bringing hope to Native children. Isn't that amazing? It's such a great video. I wish you could see it. But I watch it, and I think, man, I'm a daddy.
And I'm a grandpa now. I know I'm too young to be a grandpa, right? But there I am. My grandkids call me Bumpa and Bama. And I want to show you a picture. Yeah, this is our suddenly there are six of them, and then seven. We've added one. I don't know, it's the water in Three Hills or something. I don't know what's going on. But there they are. They're more like that. It's usually chaos. And our daughter, Rachel, who's a BCite, she has Egyptian flu, and she's going to be a mummy this week. We're expecting it any day. But I see those pictures, and my goodness, my heart breaks when I think of our native children experiencing what they are, and our children growing up in a culture that has rejected God. A shocking percent of our youth never hear of the God who would rather die than live without them. My dad was part Scotch and part ginger ale. He really was. I kid you not. Until Jesus got a hold of his life through a Bible. My mother's father got a Bible and began to read it. His life was forever changed. And as a result, my mother was changed. And me and our children and our grandchildren. So we want to do something. This morning I'm going to encourage you to do that. I know you do too, want to invest your life in bringing God's grace to others. We have a thin window of opportunity with the Gideons. So I want to invite you this morning to consider becoming a Share Word partner, to partner with the Gideons. If you do that this morning, you're going to get one of these beautiful Bibles. Just invest $25 a month or more in bringing hope to others. You can spend that on 11 cups of coffee at Tim's or one cup of coffee at Starbucks, right? Or you can invest this. My wife and I have done this and continue to do more of this. We want to do that. Thank you for investing in others. This is a church that does that. Thank you for your partnership, Brian and Myrna, and for all that you are doing. I want you to take one of these home. In your bulletin is an envelope. Would you grab that? Right there, you can fill it out and you can become a monthly partner. Just go ahead and do that during the next couple of minutes. And as I get ready to sit down here, we're going to be celebrating communion together in a minute. Would you consider partnering with us in getting God's word out to needy people? This is going to have ripple effects on generations, on families, on communities, entire nations around the world. We are so blessed, are we not? We're forgiven. We're filled with hope. So let's pass that along. It's very easy to do that this morning. I trust you will. And meet us back there at the table. I want to close with this. My son Stephen and I were passing a graveyard on a Sunday morning or a Sunday afternoon. A hole was dug in the ground, a pile of dirt beside it. He pointed out the window. He said, "Dad, look, one got out." And the more I laughed at his words, the more I began to think about them. The more I thought about them, the more I began to hang on to them. Because that is our ultimate reason for joy in whatever you are facing today. Jesus Christ is risen. One got out. He is the one who gives us strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow. Thank you, Lord. God bless you, each one. Romans 15:13 says this. It's my blessing to you this morning. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. God bless you.
Let's take a minute to be quiet and prepare our hearts for the Lord's Supper.